pastoring a different church. A guy came to me and said, "Pastor, can I talk to you?" I said, "Sure." So we went into my office. And he was one who had children later on in his life. Married late, had children later in his life. And he came and his first question is, "Pastor, what do you think about James Dawson?" I don't know of whether he's still that well known as he was in those days as the parenting and marriage guru, the Christian one. And so he asked me, "So what do you think of James Dawson?" So I said, "I don't know where he's going with this." So when you don't know, you ask back. You know, I said, "So what do you ask?" "Well," he said, "I tried to read his books and tried to follow his books when it comes to raising our children, and all I have and all I do is I feel like a failure." And I took him in my arms and I said, "Welcome to the club." "Me too. Reading his books make me feel like a failure. I can never measure up, never do all this stuff, and my kids never turn out the way as I think they should turn out, and I know." So we had a good conversation about that, how it feels. So I'm talking this morning about parenting, and if you are a parent this morning, listen up. Well, and if you're not, listen up. I know, for some of you it might be something where you feel like, "Well, that's too late for me, I'm done." And others may feel, "Well, I'm in the midst of it, so let me give you some, or hopefully I'll find something, you know, that will help me in my present situation." And some may feel like, "Well, that doesn't apply to me, I have no children." So, wherever you fall, I pray that God somehow reaches you this morning. You may also ask, "What's your credentials? What are your credentials? How can you speak about parenting?" Well, I'm not a counselor. I'm not a psychologist to say that off the bat. I'm simply a practitioner and an observer. I'm a practitioner because I've raised 4 children and they're adults now. I also talk to you as a practitioner in terms of how it humbled me. I struggled for several years to relate to my oldest son, and it was a long journey back to restore some brokenness. I also know a bit what it means to the heartache of losing a child. And I'm not standing here as an expert at all. I stand as a learner. And what I share is that, a learner. I've learned, and I'm still learning how to raise children. And I'm standing before you as an observer. I've been a pastor now for several years and had the opportunity to look into the lives of many, many, many parents and children. And you just observe. And that's good. If you observe, you see things, you have your thoughts about certain things, and you certainly don't say anything about certain things. But I have observed, and what I would like to do this morning is just share some of those things that I've learned. I don't want to give you some smart advice. I don't want you to make you feel, go home and feel this small again this morning. That's not my intent. And also what I would like to share this morning is not the principle that applies to all. Like the premise of many parenting books, unfortunately, is it worked for me, so it needs to work for you. It's not how it works. Parenting is way more complex than that, as you probably will agree. And I always said the book, How to Raise My Children, has still to be written. Because they're always different than any other books. So whatever I share, you might find it helpful. And you might take some clues out of that, or you might not agree with that. Because even that topic of raising children can be very controversial. So take it for whatever it is. I'd also don't want to do what often is done, to turn the Bible into something that it is not. And I say that with all caution. The Bible is not a book on parenting. And many turn it this way. Yes, there are certain things in the Bible that talk about parenting, and it's good to think about them. And I actually will use some Bible verses. But the Bible is not a book about parenting. And many other things that we turn the Bible into. No one has ever written the Bible. None of the authors has written the Bible with that intent. It's more like what we try to do out of that. So this is not my intent this morning. It's just sharing you some principles that are based on some Bible texts, and I hope they will help you to tackle the task and to look at this from maybe a different perspective. First one, be intentional. Be intentional. Again, no earth-shaking principles here this morning. Don't expect that. But that's one of the things I would just say right from the bat. If you start parenting, be intentional about that. We all know that phrase, you know, that the children don't come with a manual, and I think that's so true as it's odd to say, but it's true. They don't come with a manual. It's something that you have been tasked with, and now you have to learn usually as you go. And your children are not robots. They are not machines that you can just program and then out comes a certain thing. They're human beings. And as you will probably find out with your own children, each one is unique. All my four ones were all unique in their makeup and how they were, and that was always a challenge in itself, because some things which worked on one didn't work for the other, and there is no such thing as this universal rule. So be intentional about that. Here's a Bible verse that we often hear when it comes to parenting. It comes from Solomon, a wise guy who wrote this down. Train up a child in the way he should go, and even if he's old, he will not depart from it. Train up a child the way he should go, or she, even if he or she is old, she will not depart from it. And that talks to me about intentionality. I have to think about what I'm supposed to do here. So my first advice under intentionality is reflect on your task. Don't just go along with it and live with it every single day. That's what we usually do. What usually happens is before we get the first child, we read tons of books. We want to know what's waiting for us. We want to know what does it mean to be a father and a mother. And it's good. I have nothing against books. I'm an avid reader and I love reading books. But what I'm trying to tell you is when you're in it, you often forget about that. And you just are so caught up in the day-to-day thing of raising your children that you don't take your time every once in a while to take a step back and reflect. And think about what you are doing. It says here, train a child the way it should go. This is about thinking about what am I doing here? What am I actually doing here? What is the way that my child should go? What is it that after 18, 19, 20, whatever years my child leaves my home, what is it that at the end I would love to have instilled in my child? And it would be helpful to sometimes just to step back and think about it. It can be very practical as the simple things. I want to know when my child leaves my house how to do laundry, how to cook, how to manage money. And yes, also all those more heavy things, how to have values and do the right things, I know. But it sometimes comes down to the basic things. I want these skills to instill them. So you start to be very intentional about this, to teach them to your child. Train the child, your daughter and your son, the way he should go. And yes, reading a good book or two, even while you're parenting, doesn't hurt. You take out of it what you can apply and what not. Secondly, what I want to say about being intentional is watch and learn. Watch and learn. It's sometimes also good to take a step back and watch your child. We're often so caught up in that. You know, you're so tense about these things. I can say it now. I'm a grandparent and I love watching children now because I watch and learn. because you're not so in the day-to-day treadmill of raising them. And I would tell myself, just do that. Watch and learn. Be intentional about it. Observe your child. What makes him or her happy? What not? How does he or she react to certain situations? Make a mental note of that. It might be helpful in how to raise your children, and especially if you have more than one, how they all are different. Are there better ways of doing it? Watch and learn mean look into others' life. We come to that too. I will have something else to say. But look also what others do. Watch and learn. Just observe what others do and what works. But more than anything, watch your own behavior and watch your own child. And it's two things. First of all, watch your own child. What I often find is what we do with children, we project into them what we would like them to be. Even to the point what job they need to take. Because sometimes they are the ones who fulfill your dreams because you couldn't fulfill them. And your child becomes that object, a poor child, you know, that has to fulfill your dreams. Watch your child. Your child is a very unique creation that is unique. And God has wired your child in a very specific way that you cannot change. You can mess it up. But you can change it. So watch. Observe. And then let this be something that triggers the right things to do, to say, well, I see this, and that helps me. It gives me some clues how to deal with my child, which way it should go. What God has programmed and pre-programmed in my child in gifts and ways how he or she is wired. But the second part of this watch and learn is watch yourself. Be as objective as you can be about yourself. Self-reflection is often very healthy. How you react, what makes you angry, where are your buttons pushed, where you should be more reflective about that, and be realistic about them, and especially in two ways how we look at this too, because when your child grows up, your child may eventually look behind the facade and see your flaws, and it might point it out to you, so don't get offensive. Because you're not perfect. And it's sometimes as painful as it is, but if they can pinpoint your character and you know that's there, right? It's good to hear and to listen and sometimes even to give your child and say, you're right. And I'm learning too. Be realistic about your children, about yourself and about your children as much as possible. I know our children are the greatest and the best. It's okay. But realistic about them. They're not angels. You know how I often experience that, and I speak very practically. It's not a very theological sermon today. When I did youth camps, I did many years, for over 10 years I did youth camps, and the kids, when they go to youth camps, they are not always the same as they are at home. And then when sometimes trouble arose, and we had to make every once in a while a phone call and say, you know what, this is what happened, and you need to know, but my child would never do this. Well, I could tell you, be realistic about that. You know, our children are not angels. So that's about watch and learn. I have to go through this quickly, and I know there's way more to say about that. So please bear with me as we just knock on some of those doors, and hopefully they're open and help us in some ways. Secondly, honor your father and mother. You may ask, what does that have to do with raising children? Honor your father and mother. It was part of the text that we heard this morning. And if there's one thing I need to say about that, you as a father and a mother cannot force your child to honor you. Well, no, that's not how the text was written. Because if that would be true, then other texts would apply as well, because it says, love your neighbor as yourself. And I cannot force my neighbor to love me. This is more a different level. The text says, you know, it comes from the Old Testament, Exodus 20, verse 12. It says, honor your father and mother, then you will live long, a full life in the land of the Lord, that the Lord your God is giving you. By the way, the honoring anyhow had more to do in the Old Testament world with providing for the parents, and also it had to do with shame and honor. There was a shame and honor-driven society. And honoring your parents was also not to bring shame on their name. That was honoring your parents. Not so much about having respect to them. It's part of that. I totally agree with that. But it's not that whole thing. You know, that sometimes parents who don't act the way that really instills respect, that you're now forced to artificially respect them. That's not honest. And that's not what the Bible says. Honoring your father and mother has more to do with that, not to bring shame. But that's not my point this morning. My point this morning, when I mentioned that, is if you look at your father and your mother, this is the first parenting book that you read, is how you were brought up. So my first point is reflect on how you were raised. Reflect on how you were raised. You are the product of that. However your parents were, however you have experienced your parents, but that's who you are. You are the product of that. And it takes sometimes your children to see some traits in you that are just coming out because you are the product of your parents. And you know what often happens is that some things come out that you don't like. You didn't like what your dad or mom did, and then you find yourself doing the same thing. And sometimes you hate yourself for that. When you catch yourself and say, do the same stuff. But that's why it's good, as you raise your children, just think of how you were raised. How were you raised? What made you the way you are? It's the first book, as I said, that you read. It's also good to make notes of what worked and what didn't. I mean, you're old enough to reflect on this critically. So what worked with your children, your parents, how they brought you up? And it's nothing to criticize them for that, because your parents did it whatever they did in their time with their capabilities and their ways of doing it. So it's good to make a mental note and say, what worked? What can I imitate? And say, that was good. And what, to be realistic, what didn't really work that well? Because that also will come out in your own character, in your own way, how you relate to your child. If you have time to reflect on that, and that sometimes may cause you even to work deeply on that, and that might take, and I'll be really honest, it may take counseling. To work on some things where things didn't go that well, and you need to address that. Because you see some traits that are in you that somehow will impact your child, that you need to work on them so that they don't get those negative traits. So honor your father and mother by thinking about how you were raised, what they did, what they sacrificed. And to be honest, in some ways, I just learned to appreciate my parents through my own children, because I saw what they had to go through when we grew up. My goodness, you know, that was not all that easy. Third, your child is God's gift. Your child is God's gift. Very simple. But you know the Bible text. It says in Psalm 127, verse 3, children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from Him. Now, if I now speak as one who is now theologically correct, I would say it doesn't say children in this text. It says sons. And in the context of this psalm, it also has makes sense, because sons were really the security for a family. The more sons you have in a family, the more secure you were, because you lived in a world where there was no legal system as we know it in our days. Sons were more, if the more you have, the stronger the family was. And in that case, sons are a gift from the Lord. But it's also not wrong to take this text and use it in general ways, that children are a gift of the Lord. And by the way, this is one of the basis of child dedication. I know some of you are about to dedicate your child. And this has to do with that, that children are a gift from the Lord, and that you recognize that. And you honor that. And you just ask God for wisdom, how to raise that gift that is in your hands for a certain amount of years. That you ask God to help you and to give you wisdom, and also ask the support of the church family to help you with that. But there are other implications if you say that your child is a gift from God. And one very simple one is, it's not your own. You don't own your child. Think about that. You don't own it. It's a gift, gifted to you by God. So what does it mean? First, don't let pride get in your way. Don't let pride get in your way. What do I mean by that? Children do not exist to bolster your pride so that you can brag before others. And friends, that goes, that starts early on. Oh, my child can't walk with 6 months and she was already walking. How about yours? And mine could talk with 8 months. Do you know how that goes with parents and moms and dads go together? And moms are more in that phase of life, men, you know, husbands later on in life, you know, well, my kid is this and that. Went to this school, has this degree, is in sports. Do you know how that is? You know what it is? It's pride. It's simple pride in your children. Let me say this one very simple thing. You are not in a competition. Don't let pride get in your way. That you are proud of your children. Your child should be the first to know that. And not all the other ones. Tell your child how proud you are of him or her. They need to know that. They need to be affirmed by that. The rest is a byproduct. And yes, there's nothing wrong that we are proud before our children. But friends, this is not a competition. And by the way, how often is it that our children, and I noticed that when I was doing this, how my children are embarrassed about that, that I am so bragging about them. And I'm so sorry for that, because I would never want to embarrass my children, ever. But often I did, because my pride got in the way, and I thought, wow, that's so cool that they're doing this and that. So don't let pride get in your way. Your child is a gift from God. And you are tasked to raise this child that is God's gift. Your first line of responsibility is to God and not to parents. You are with no parent in the world. You are in a competition with no parent in the world. No one. It's your child. Be proud of it and let your child know it. But not because you're in competition with anyone. And I know, I speak in a very open, a church is a good environment where this pride can take over. You know, when we have all things, you know, we measure ourselves with what our kids are and who they are. But you know, I also feel bad if your child does not fit in some of those categories. And that leads me to the next one. Mutual respect. Respect your child. The value of your child is not in the good marks, in the titles it earns, the job it has. The value of your child is in purely to be a creation of God. And a child that is excelling and has PhDs is not more valuable than the child that struggles with learning disabilities, with depression, or is even handicapped. This is not the value of your child. The value is it is a creation of God. Respect that. And don't be ashamed. If your child doesn't measure up with who knows where and who knows what, if your child might not fit into those categories sometimes where you can measure, but if your child is unique, if your child struggles, and how often do I feel that parents are ashamed about that? Can I be honest? Don't also be ashamed if your child, if you're a Christian parent, doesn't turn out to be a Christian. How often is that attached with shame? Or did something wrong? You know, I will talk later on and mention that you don't have guarantees about the outcome of your child. You don't. If it turns out to be a follower of Jesus Christ, thank God for that. And give God honor and glory for that. That's not you. But often this is the shame that we often have, and though we don't mention that. Or if our child has learning disabilities, or if a child has some other struggles in life, or a child struggles with depression. It's not so cool to be bragging about that, isn't it? But your child has value. Respect the makeup of your child. Respect the wonder that it is. Respect how God has revealed himself in your child, in all his beauty, his magnificence. His greatness. How God has done this in your child. Respect it. And by the way, respect breeds what? respect. Respect breeds respect. If my child knows that I respect my child for who he or she is, it will breed respect. By the way, that's the context of Ephesians, where it says about that we should submit ourselves mutually. And then I mentioned that 2 weeks ago when I talked about marriage, that this is the pretext of marital submission as also children. And then later on, he talks about slaves and masters. And the next point under this is relinquish outcomes. Relinquish outcomes. I know how much anxiety is attached with raising our children. I'm a little bit more advanced with raising my children, and you talk to some who are just starting raising children, they get totally freaked out. You know, when you talk about what all waits for them, and you don't know what the story is, and we get a lot of anxiety, and we all want to do it right, and we do it the best, and it's good. We all want to be the best parents. But truth is that we cannot control the destiny of our children. As much as we can influence it, as much as we can do good, but we cannot ultimately control it. And I do deliberately and sometimes forcefully have to relinquish that and let it go. Because sometimes we get so tied up about that, you know, that we need to, that it turns out the right way. And again, don't get me wrong, good principles are good principles. But in my heart, I need to really make this deliberate choice, and listen very carefully, this deliberate choice, and say, God, this child is yours. And I have no control over the final outcome of that. Here's the fourth principle I've learned. Your child is shaped by who you are. Your child is shaped by who you are. And that's a principle that we often overlook. Listen to this proverb. It says here, the righteous person behaves in integrity. Blessed are his children after him. A righteous person is somebody who conducts himself or herself in a proper way in a community. That's where righteousness comes. It had nothing to do with how we often do that in the legal realm. Righteousness had to do with to act properly. That I, as a part of a community, do what is expected of me and I do this right. So I am, the other word that is used is integrity. That I'm a person of integrity. So that has to do with me. And to see the context here, the righteous person behaves in integrity and says, blessed are his children after him. So my actions and the way how I act in community, and also, by the way, with God, has impact on my children. So the first that I draw out of that is work on yourself. Never stop working on yourself. Because that is, in the end, what impacts my children. Many things are not taught, they are caught. And especially when it comes to raising children. See, what my parents have told me, many, many things I've forgotten. Except for some funny sayings that I still remember that my dad had. And my wife always gets mad when I mention them. But what I more remember is who they were. That I remember. I remember certain incidences. For example, I mentioned one this morning when we had our center class. So one of the things that I, for example, remember, I was still very young and I was maybe, I can't even remember exactly the age that I had, but I vividly remember that my mom came to my room and apologized. And I thought, I couldn't even make sense of this. I said, why is she apologizing? But she said, you know, this day I was not doing the right thing and I just want to be telling you that I'm sorry for that. Wow. That changed my whole world. I said, how would she do that? Did this make me think less of her because she admitted that she was not right? No. That made me way higher. I said, wow, my mom apologized to me. And I learned that. Because I said, I don't want to ever be too proud to apologize to my children and say, hey, I messed up. I didn't do this right. Can you forgive me? Especially when they're older and they have more idea of what is right and wrong and they can see through stuff. I need to apologize. I need to say, hey, I'm wrong. Never be too proud of that. Because that's how I do relay the message. What I do counts more than what I say. And by the way, that also relates to my other values that I try to instill in my children. You know, how they are raised and how they learn values. It's just by what I do. Even when it comes to my spiritual life. See, I can raise him to teach him to read the Bible and to pray and to go to church. But guess what they pick up? What I do. What I do. And when we talk about change, you know, one of the things when I see, I still remember another incident, I don't want to tell too much story, but when I saw my father change, because he saw that this was not right, and he changed, his character changed. I thought, wow. See, kids are and pick up who you are. So that's important for us to understand that we never stop working on our character. Work on yourself. And the second thing that probably has to do with that as well is the kids and your kids are also the product of your home. The kids are the product of your home. You, as a parent, create a home. And therefore, I have it phrased differently, predictable patterns. Predictable patterns. Yes, there is a rebellious phase in children when they rebel and find it also boring that we all do this kind of stuff. But believe me, first of all, don't get intimidated by that. It's bluff. But also, hang in there. Because what keeps them centered is certain predictable patterns how you as a family function. Call it traditions, whatever. It gives stability. It's something predictable. The world is crazy enough in which we live. The world outside changes all the time. Children are always on the go and they're always forced to change and to adapt and this and that. But home is often that safe haven when they come home. And there are certain patterns that are there and you can fall back on them. And I know even for our family, there's certain traditions that we have kept over many, many years to this day that are there. There might not be big things. They go down, by the way, to the very simple thing, what we eat on Christmas Eve. It's you don't touch that and change it. We tried. You know, it's important what we eat on Christmas Eve. It's part of our tradition. And I find this good because they come home now. They do come home from whoever they are and they say, well, that's good. Good to be home. And this is what we always did. And it's good to have those traditions. See, your life at home, if that's chaotic, if there's a lot of fighting, if there's a lot of division, if there's a lot of ups and downs and here and there, I mean, it will impact your child. Or if you have some predictable patterns where your child knows this is okay, this is safe, I'm here and you can learn from what my parents do. One other thing that we learn way too late in life is maybe to embrace even a mission in life. A certain mission that we as a family do. I didn't have a chance to do because my kids were out of the house when I learned stuff like this, but I thought it's good to have certain mission that we do together. That we are together with and just do this thing together. It helps. Predictable pattern. And last but not least, never give up. Never give up. Now that sounds so easy, but friends, this is not always easy. And I know as a parent, you are sometimes stretched to the limit. If one thing humbled me most in my life is parenting. There were phases in my life when I would have done anything. I would have given up my job. I would have swept the streets if it needed to be, if I could just go back and do some things and change the relationships that we had with our kids. It's humbling. There's many days when I was there and said, Lord, I don't know what to do. I have no clue what to do. Do you feel that way ever? I had many days. But there's one thing, never give up. And two things that I would add to that. Never give up loving your children. Never, ever give up loving your children. And friends, loving doesn't mean smothering. Smothering is when we just get over them and we hug them and they don't leave the nest. You know that you stay in the nest, and if they move, not far away, please. Close to mother's nest. Don't. This is not loving. Loving, love, the Bible understands love is, I want the best for my child or for any other person, by the way. I want the best for it. And here's what Paul says. You know this text. He says, love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It's not irritable. It keeps no record of being wronged. It doesn't rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up. Love never loses faith. It always is hopeful, endures through every circumstance. Man, here's the thing to learn. Love your child that way. Never give up. Always have hope. Always rejoice in the good things that happen. And never keep a record of wrong. Rip that book apart. It's usually in your mind. Rip it apart. Throw it away. Don't keep record of wrongs. Throw them out. Love your child. And secondly, never give up praying for your child. It's the best thing you can do. I mean, if one thing I learned in parenting is praying. I had no other way to do. I had no clue. So never give up praying for your child. And by that, I don't mean just crying out to God when you don't know where else to turn, but that you also have those moments in your day or sometimes even during the week and say, God, I want to pray now for my children. And they might not be in your house anymore and they might be anywhere, but you can pray for them. Never give up praying for your children. Bring them before God. And take time for that. And I literally mean that. Take time for that. Take time to set aside, God, I want to pray now for my children. To bring them before God. Job is a great example. It says in the book of Job, Job's sons would take turns preparing feasts in their homes. And they would also invite their three sisters to celebrate with him. When the celebrations ended, sometimes after several days, Job would purify his children. He would get up early in the morning and offer burnt offerings for each of them. For Job said to himself, perhaps my children have sinned and they have cursed God in their hearts. This was Job's regular practice. He stood in for his children before God. And that's our greatest and most important task that we do. Stand in for them. Never give up praying for them. And by the way, I think your children will come back to that. They may not admit it when they have the rebellious phase. But I know I could rely on the prayers of my parents when I did my thing. I know now how our kids sometimes come back and, Dad, can you pray? And I gladly do, to pray for them. And thirdly, remember that your child is never outside of God's reach. No matter where your child is today. What he or she is doing. Remember that your child is never outside God's reach. You may not be able to reach your child. Your relationship may be on the rocks and you have a long way back to restore that. That doesn't happen overnight. But your child is never outside the reach of God. How many times have I taken refuge to that? When I felt like I am out of touch with them, where they move away and they go their own way and live in different cities and different towns and make their own choices. And you feel like, well, here I go. I can't do anything about it. No, that's right. But your child is never outside of the reach of God. And we have experiences in ways that we would have never dreamt of, how God is doing that, how he can reach in ways that we could never even imagine that. It says in Psalm 139:7, I can never escape from your spirit. I can never get away from your presence. That's true for your child. It can never run away. And even if it rebels against God and doesn't want to have anything to do with God, I would rather say, shut up, stop preaching. It doesn't help anyhow, but pray. Pray. Because God will be able to reach it. Another text said, Am I a God who only is close at hand, says the Lord? No. I am far away at the same time. Can anyone hide from me in a secret place? Am I not everywhere in all the heavens and earth, says the Lord? Your child can't hide, so can't you, but it's more for children now. They can't. They're there wherever they are, and sometimes that's what we do. We just pray and rely on the fact that God is with them, watches over them, holds them, goes with them, carries them, is with them. Will you pray with me? Yeah, Father, we thank you that we have in you such a good and perfect Father. But we as parents are learners, learning to do what you have called us to do. Thank you for the lessons we learn by parenting. Thank you for just having so much grace and so much forgiveness that we need to seek when we mess up and have to deal with our inadequacies, with our shortcomings, sometimes even our sinful acts and sinful behaviors. But Father, we do all this before you, where we can come before you and find healing and find restoration. And Father, I don't know how our situations are here this morning. Some of us may have broken relationships with their children. And my heart aches for that. Father, I pray that you help us to never give up loving our children, not keeping records of wrongs, but loving them and praying for them. And I pray that you lead them also in ways where they can find reconciliation and forgiveness. Pray for those parents who have young children, toddlers, infants, who go about this task with a lot of fear and anxiety. Father, I pray that they may be able to relax and find their comfort in you, that you are the one who will guide them through this process. They will never be alone. They will never have to do it alone. You are there all the way. Help them, God, to be constant learners, to learn with their children, to raise them in a way that honors you. And then I pray for us as a church family that we may be a place where it's good to learn together. Help us not to be judgmental. Forgive us if we become competitive. And when our pride gets in our way, how we look at each other and judge each other, forgive us, Father. And let us appreciate every single person, every child, as a gift from you. God, we have so much to learn. And we thank you that you take us by your hand and that you teach us. We thank you for that, Jesus. Amen.